This week's parsha is Parshas Korach. Page 820. So let's start first off the beginning. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi. Korach the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kos ben Levi, took Vadasan Vaviram ben Eliav, Vaoin ben Pelas ben Reuven, Korach together with Dathan, Aviram, and Oin, the son of Peleth, all from the tribe of Reuven. They arose before Moshe together with 250 men from amongst the Jewish people. Nesi'i Eda, princes of the assembly, Kriyei Moed, called together for special meetings. Anshei Shem, people of name. Vayakalu al Moshe al Aaron, they assembled against Moshe and Aaron. They said to them, too much for you. The entire assembly are all holy in their midst as God. And why do you lift yourselves above the assembly of Hashem? So, if we follow Rashi, Korach was jealous of the fact that he had not been assigned any position amongst the tribe of Levi. And based on that, he decided to challenge Moshe Rabbeinu's authority. And he comes to Moshe, according to Rashi, and he says, you know, the fact that you took, you're the king, it's not right for you to take now the Kohuna Gadol, the high priesthood, for your brother, because as Rashi says, everybody heard, everybody received the Torah at Har Sinai, everybody should have a chance. So, Vayishma Moshe Vayapal Alpanav, Moshe heard what he was saying and he fell on his face. By Yidabra o Korach, he then spoke to Korach v'kaladus leimar to his entire assembly, saying, "Baker in the morning, v'yidah Hashem es asher loy, Hashem will make known who is to him, v'es HaKadosh and the Holy One, v'hikri v'elav, and he shall bring him close to him. V'es asher yivchar bo yakri v'elav, the one that he will choose, that's the one that he will bring close to him." So Rashi explains that Moshe was telling Korach and to his entire assembly, that if you're all seeking to be Kohanim Gadolim, it's not going to happen. There's only one Kohen Gadol, and there is going to be a test in which to see who is meant to be the Kohen Gadol, and the one that Hashem chooses will be the one who will be the Kohen Gadol. Not only will he be the one who will be the Kohen Gadol, he will be the only one to survive. The rest of you won't make it. This is what Moshe said. And that was the test that he said. Everybody should take a fire pan, put in the keteres, put in the incense, bring it before Hashem. And again, whoever is supposed to be the Kohen Gadol, he will be the one to survive. The rest of you will not. Now, Rashi here goes like, I'm going to focus on the following Rashi. Rashi, on Boker v'yoda Hashem. In the morning, Hashem will make it be known. So Rashi, on page 822, on the right column, three lines from the top in Rashi, Umedrashai Boker. The Medrash says on this word Boker, that Moshe Rabbeinu said, in the morning, Hashem will make known, Omer lahem Moshe. Hashem Moshe. Moshe said to them, "Gvulois chalak hakadosh baruch hu bo'elamai. Hashem has established boundaries in His world. Yichaylam atem lafoich breaker la'erev. Can you change the morning into evening? Kein tuchu labato azu. So too shall you be able to nullify or to change what has already been done." By starting his words with the word, by Moshe Rabbeinu starting his reply with the word Boker in the morning, Moshe was not just saying when it's going to happen, but he was actually alluding to a message to them. That the same way Boker is something that Hashem established, He's established boundaries in His world. There is day, has its specific amount of time and its boundaries, night has its specific time and its specific boundaries. You can't change it. So too, there was supposed to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu established that Aaron is the Kohen Gadol. That's a boundary. Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, no one else. And the same way that you cannot change the boundaries, the parameters of day and night, you can't change day to night or night to day, you will not be able to change Aaron from the Kohen Gadol to the not Kohen Gadol and someone else to become the Kohen Gadol in his place. That's Rashi, that's the Medrash. So the Chassam Sefer, in his commentary on Chumash, asks, why is it that when Moshe Rabbeinu chose an example of Hashem's boundaries in the world, he chose night and day, morning and evening? There are other boundaries in the world. For instance, we find many psukim that talk about the fact that the shore that the sand is the boundary to the water. And when the water, when the waves rush forward, it's, so to speak, symbolic of the water trying to break over the boundaries, but it can't, because Hashem has set boundaries for the water. And as much as the water seems to try to go beyond those boundaries, it can't succeed. So day and night is not the only example of parameters that Hashem has set in the world to be an example to say that you can't change the parameters of Aaron being the Kohen Gadol. So why did Moshe use the example of night and day more than any other example? That's the Chassam Sefer's question. So he gives a very interesting explanation, and in order to fully appreciate what he's going to say, what he says, we have to look back in a different Rashi. And we have to look back on page 820. So Rashi is again in the, on the right column of Rashi, and it's 5 lines from the bottom of the page. Rashi there says, "Umara Korach lachlek Moshe." What brought Korach to challenge Moshe? Niskana al nesiusa shel itzafen ben Uziel, sheminahu Moshe nasi al bnei kas al pi adibur. Korach was troubled by the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu appointed his younger cousin as the prince of the family of Kohath, the Kohath family of the Levian. The prince of that family was Elitzafan ben Uziel, the son of a younger son, than a younger cousin of his. Even and Moshe had done that based on Hashem's command, but Korach was very jealous of what had happened. He felt slighted. Amar Korach, Korach said, Achi Abba Arba Hayu. My father had four, there are four brothers in my father's family. Four brothers meaning being the children of Kohath. Shenamra v'nei Kohath, as the Pasuk tells us in Shemais, the sons of Kohath were Amram, Yitzhar, Chevrain, and Uziel. Amram v'char not l'shnei ben of Gedula. Amram was the firstborn, and his two sons both took the highest positions. Echad melech v'echad kohen gadol. One's the king, referring to Moshe. One's the kohen gadol, the high priest, referring to Aaron. Nu, mi roli tolas hashniya. So who should be getting the next job? Who should be getting the next position? Lo yani, not I. Shani ben Yitzhar shusheni v'amram. I'm the oldest of Yitzhar, who is the son following Amram. V'humina nasi es ben achiv ha'kata mikulam. And instead he took the son of the youngest of all the brothers. That bothered Korach. He felt that he was passed over when he shouldn't have been. Therefore, Korach says, I'm now going to argue on him, and I'm going to nullify whatever he says. I'm going to undermine his authority. Ma'asa, Sabashi continues, what did Korach do? Omar v'kines masayim v'chamishim rashi sanadroiz. He brought together 250 of the greatest Torah scholars, Ruban mishevet Ruben Shechinov, the majority of them being his neighbors. From the tribe of Reuven, who were nearby, Ben Elitza Ben Shadur v'Chaverav, they are Elitza Ben Shadur, who was Ben Shadur. He was the prince of the tribe of Reuven and his Chaverim, his colleagues. Shenemar Nesi'eder Kriya Mayid. Okay, along with the Kriya Eda. They are Bishan Talisa Shkulin Tchelas. What did he do? He dressed them all in talisim or in cloaks that were completely dyed Tchelas, the special blue color of one of the strings of the tzitzis. Bov Amru lefnei Moshe. They came and stood before Moshe. Amru, like they said to him, Talish shekula shel tchelas. If you have a cloak completely dyed the color tchelas, chayeves betzitzis ha'ptura. Does it still need to have tzitzis or not? Amru lehem chayeves. So he said it does need. His chilula sachik alav. They began to laugh at him. Evsher talish shel min acher. You're going to tell me that a talis of a different type, meaning of a different color, not dyed tchelas. Chut echa she tcheles paitra. One string of tcheles is going to exempt it. Zu shekula tcheles like tifter es atzma. So now if the entire beggar is tcheles, should it be exempt? Meaning, he's asking, Moshe Rabbeinu is being asked, if my entire talis, the entire cloak is tcheles, do I still need tzitzis with a string of tcheles? Moshe Rabbeinu says yes. So they say, what do you need a string of tcheles for? But if I don't have a garment of tchelas, one string of tchelas is going to help me. So if the entire garment is tchelas, I shouldn't need tchelas. What do I need tchelas for? So they were trying to undermine and trying to say that Moshe Rabbeinu's, what he claims a mitzvah, doesn't make sense. Now there's a lot of discussion about this argument of Korach, you know, what exactly, how valid is this argument? There's a lot of questions you could ask in this argument. But what's interesting is that the Chassam Sefer brings down from his Rebbe, Reb Nathan Adler, that don't take this argument about the talis, about the tzitzis, just as a way of trying to say to Moshe, what you're saying doesn't make sense, so what you say isn't true. And rather, it's also part of their message. It's part of their message you're trying to get across. Part of the message of saying that Aaron should not be the Kohen Gadol, but that, as Korach seems to say, everyone should either have a chance to be the Kohen Gadol, that this whole business with the Tcheles relates to that. So the Chassam Sefer brings from his Rebbe Ben Nathan Adler that said that Korach's point was that the same way that when I have a garment that's all Tcheles, I shouldn't need one string of Tcheles because I have the Tcheles in my garment. So too, a nation like the Jewish people, that everyone is holy, that everyone heard the Aseret HaDibros at Har Sinai, they don't need a leader. They don't need you. What do they need you for? They're all holy. They can all take care of themselves. So the Tcheles palace that they're trying to say should be exempt from needing tzitzis, that's the way of saying that the same way that if you have a whole palace of Tcheles, you shouldn't need a string of Tcheles, so too if a whole nation is holy, then you shouldn't need a leader. Because they don't need one specific person to be above them. They're all holy. They don't need it. The same way if we have a talis that's all tchelas, shouldn't need a string of tchelas. That's from Nathan Adler said. That was the point of what Korach was trying to bring out specifically with this example of tchelas, of the tzitzis with tchelas. So Chassam Sefer asks that according to his explanation, that means that Korach isn't even not trying to better himself. Korach is trying to be, hey, we're all holy and we should all be able to be Kohen Gadol, we should all be able to be the same thing. And even though one could maybe say that that's, you know, Korach's politicking, even though deep down he wants something more, but the Chassam Sefer asks that according to the explanation of his Rebbe, it comes out that Korach is claiming everybody should be the same. There should be no need for leadership. And the Chassam Sefer says, that's not what Korach wanted. That's not what Korach was going for. Korach was going for himself. And therefore, he finds it very difficult to learn that Korach was trying to basically stand up for everyone, make everybody the same. Even though I do believe there are those who at least learn that that was Korach's original claim, or at least when he comes first to claim and say, you know, everybody's holy, entire assembly is holy, why do you lift yourselves up above the people? I do believe that, I think Rashi learns that way, that Korach at least is trying to say on the outside that everybody should have a chance to be the Kohen Gadol. However, even Rashi, it's pretty clear that Korach doesn't have a problem theoretically with Moshe being the king. He's got a problem with Aaron being the Kohen Gadol, but he doesn't have a problem with Moshe being the king. And according to Reb Nathan Adler, the point is they don't need a king either. They need anything. So therefore, the Chassam Sefer gives the following explanation. And he makes a very interesting observation into something about the history of the Jewish people. He says that you do not find that the kings of the Jewish people were Nevi'im. You don't find that. David HaMelech was not a Navi. Doesn't say anywhere in Pesukim that he was a Navi. Tehillim that he wrote Beruach HaKodesh, what we call the spirit of holiness. That there's a difference between Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah. Prophecy is when you receive a communique from Hashem. Ruach HaKodesh means that basically your perception expands beyond the normal human perception. And clearly that's a divine inspiration. Clearly Hashem is expanding, giving you more perception. But it's really it's an expansion of your perception beyond what the normal capacity of human comprehension is. But it's not a communique from Hashem. You don't see that as a communication from Hashem. You may realize Hashem is giving you great knowledge, but it's not a message coming to you from Hashem that you have to receive, decipher, and pass on. So we don't find that the kings were prophets. It's interesting, his wording is that we don't find that the kings, we don't find any of the kings being a prophet sent to the people, except for Moshe Rabbeinu. Does that mean maybe some of them were private prophets? I'm not sure. But again, the prophets that we know of are prophets that were sent to deliver messages to the people. You don't find that, but any of the kings. You also don't find that a Navi should be king. The two things don't go together. The kings were the kings, the prophets were the prophets. Okay? V'lochein amur chazal, therefore our sages say, a very interesting way he explains this saying of chazal, v'meis Moshe ad Rebbe, from the days of Moshe until Rebbe, meaning Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rida HaNasi, v'metzinu Torah gudur b'makim echad. We do not find Torah and greatness in one place. What does that mean? What is Torah and what is greatness? The evil kolanaviyim ayu aleyim b'gudur b'hashepet b'hamelach shebiyamav. Because the Navi was never on top. The Navi always had someone above him in rank, so to speak. It was either the shofet, the judge, or it was the king. But the Navi was never the top man. The Navi was always under the king or the melech, meaning the Navi, the main Navi of the people that was sent as the main prophet to the people. And at the same time, when you look at all the kings, even regard to David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, the prophets in their times were greater than them in Torah. So the prophets were greater than Shlomo HaMelech? I'm not sure exactly what that means, but that's what he says. The prophets were greater than David and Shlomo in Torah. Rabbi Yaakov Konevsky points out that actually, if you look in the first Mishnah of Perkei Avos, which says, Moshe kibbutz Torah miSinai, Moshe received the Torah from Sinai, Messiah of Yeshua gave it to Yeshua, Yeshua was the Kedem, Yeshua to the elders, was the Kedem and the Neviim, the elders to the Neviim. So who are the elders? So he says the elders are the Shoftim. So that means the transmission of Torah Shel Peh, the oral law, started from Moshe and went to Yeshua. From Yeshua went to all the other judges. But then it went from the judges to the prophets. That means there came to a point of time that the leader of the people was no more the main transmitter of the Torah. The prophet became the main transmitter of the Torah. Which means the main transmitter of the Torah Shel Baal Peh, once you had the kings, was not the king, but rather the prophet. So you have, that's what it means when Chazal say, by Moshe Rabbeinu you had Torah and Gedulah in the same place. Moshe was the greatest in Torah, and Moshe was the king. He was above everyone. The same thing with Yehuda HaNasi. Yehuda HaNasi was the greatest scholar, and he was the Nasi, he was the prince. He was above everyone. But any time else, any other king near the prophet, you never had the Torah, you never had the knowledge of Torah and Gedulah and the stature and the, you know, the highest position of control of the people in one place. The king had the greatest Gedulah, he was the greatest in status. Everyone was subjugated to him. But at the same time, the prophets were the greatest, were the ones who were the greatest in Torah. That's the point. Moshe is the only one. Moshe is the only one that you find that it was a king and a prophet. Reuven HaNasi wasn't a prophet. But the point is, though, that in Moshe you have the tyrant, you're trying to bring out the idea that everything else that existed everywhere else was the king was not the greatest in Torah, but was the greatest in stature. The prophet was the greatest in Torah, but he was under the king. Moshe had Torah and Gedulah b'makom echad. Moshe had Torah and greatness in the same place. And Reuven HaNasi had it in the same place. Just to realize he wasn't a full-fledged king like Moshe, or like the other kings. Now, so he continues and he says, and the reason, what's the reason? Why is it that you can't, that it always was, that a king couldn't be a prophet, and a prophet couldn't be a king? Why are these two things seemingly mutually exclusive? And he explains, because each one's essence and character has to be different. The Melech, he says, Tarech lahanig asle b'rei sha'am, ve'in alav ela Hashem alaykav. The king has to carry himself above everyone else. There is only one other power above the king amongst the Jewish people, and that's the Ribbono Shel Olam. There is nothing, that's the only thing above the king. If the king is not allowed to be meich, let him forgo his honor. He has to hold himself above the people. That is what the king has to do. Aval hanavi yafalo v'yisrach kakana. For a prophet, he should be soft as a reed. He should be soft, bendable as a reed. Uvisnag b'shiflus. And through that, and actually act in a very lowly, humble manner. Excuse me. And through that, he now brings the flow of the seas to the people. by the prophet through his humility, it's his humility that now, if I understand this correctly, it's his humility that now allows that through now, that he's able to shower prophecy and everything, the benefits of prophecy that come to the Jewish people. Because he is so humble, he now becomes the conduit for that whole flow, for that flow of prophecy and for all the benefits that come from prophecy. They now come through him. And he explains this through a famous Gemara that says, the entire world is sustained in merit of the sage Rabbi Chanina. The Chanina b'ni died like the kav chaluvin, and Chanina, my son, all he needs is a kav of carobs, meaning all his sustenance is very little, but because of him, everybody else gets sustenance. Pirush, what does that mean? Shehayu died like the emes with the shiflusei ubchisusei be'enav. Because of, why could Rabbi Chanina subsist just on one kav of carobs? The answer is because he didn't make a fuss over himself. In his own mind, he was so simple and so lowly that what does he need more than just a kav chavuvin? But it's because of that, it's because of that attitude, it's because of that humility that he now brings so much now, other shefa, all the world is sustained because of him. The Navi works the same way. The Navi in his lowliness, or in his humility rather, he now becomes the main prophet, he becomes the flow for prophecy to the world. And the Chassam Sefer seems to be saying, and the flow of all the other blessings of the world that come together with that. A prophet is not supposed to put himself above the people. Proof being, Shmuel was famous for the fact that he didn't sit there and wait for people to come to him. He went around to everyone. He traveled the entire Eretz Yisrael. Elisha did the same thing. They didn't sit in their place and everybody to come to them. They went to everyone. That's because a Navi is supposed to be humble and lowly and basically a servant of the people. There's other examples of that. Right? On the contrary, a king, regarding a king, it says that on the contrary, a king, which I think this is what Shmuel said to, he brings down from when Shmuel spoke to the people before bringing Shaul, as v'nech nekach l'avodim, if he wants this king, he can take your children as servants, like it or not, which means the king at the same, meaning the Navi is humble, he goes to the people. The Melech, on the other hand, has the power to take the people for himself. Okay? So, and another example that he brings, v'harei okay, now, so therefore he's saying that this is the reason why you can't be a king and a Navi. It's two opposites. The king has to actually bring himself, hold himself above the rest of the people, and the Navi has to be very humble. The humility of the Navi is not what the king is supposed to portray. That's not what he's supposed to bring out to the people. My understanding is the king is supposed to be for the people the example in this world, the closest example in this world, to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's the rulership, it's the power of the king that gives people the understanding of how they should see Hashem as the king. The king who now unites the Jewish people together under his leadership and control is supposed to be the example for the Jewish people to see how they should approach the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it's not for the king to be lowly and humble, but rather for the Navi, it is. The Navi is supposed to be lowly and humble. And I think we can add to this, to add to this whole idea, that the Igeres Ramban, the famous letter of the Ramban, when he talks about the Mida of another, when he talks about the trait of humility, he talks about how a person should behave and act to make himself humble, and he says, the Kasher Tisnaheg Mida of another, and when you then behave following the trait of humility, L'spaseish Mikol Adam, to act lowly and humble before every man. This is pachid mimenu uminachet, and to be fearful of Hashem and from sinning. Os tishre olecha ruach hashchina, then the spirit of the divine presence will rest upon you. Viziv kavaida, and the shine of its honor. V'chayayim abra, in life in the world to come. The prize, the crown of all traits, says the Ramban, is humility. And when you will acquire humility, the Ruach HaShechina, the Spirit of the Shechina, will then rest upon you. There is something unique about humility that it brings the Shekhinah upon a person. We can apply that to what the Chassam Sefer is saying by a Navi. A Navi who is supposed to be that one that Hashem communicates and rests his Shekhinah upon them, because the Shekhinah now connects with the Navi. What is the trait that the Navi has that makes him worthy, makes him fit to have the prophecy? The answer is humility. As Ramban says, when you practice humility, when you live your humility, the spirit of Shekhinah will rest upon you. That's what the Navi is supposed to be. Therefore, the Navi is supposed to be very humble. So a Navi can't be a king, says the Chassam Sefer, and a king can't be a Navi. Now the Chassam Sefer continues, going back to Tzitzis. We know that in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Tzitzis, where do the tzitzis have to be? At the corner edges of your garment. So Chassam Sefer asks a very interesting question. We know that the Torah tells us, you're supposed to see the tzitzis. And by seeing the tzitzis, it reminds you to do the mitzvahs of Hashem. So wouldn't it make more sense for the tzitzis to be higher so you can see them better? Instead of being at the bottom of your garment and it's hard to see, or it's not as easy to see, it's much easier to see them if they're higher up on your garment. So why didn't Hashem give us the mitzvah of wearing tzitzis higher up so you can see them better? The answer is because Chazal say that a person's, let me just find the way he says it, right, tzarech sheet in einav lamata v'liba lamala. A person has to put his eyes, he has to have his eyes to the ground and his heart above. His eyes should be facing downwards, his heart should be going upwards. In his heart and his thoughts, he is supposed to be thinking about the greatness of Hashem. But when it comes to himself, he has to be looking to the ground. He has to realize that he comes from dirt, and he's going to return to dirt. At the same time that he's thinking about the greatness of Hashem, he always reminds himself of how lowly he is to be. That's how a person is always supposed to be. Therefore, it's true that a person, one of the strings of tzitzis is tchelas. It's the blue color. And Rashi tells us, again, based on Chazal, that the color of tchelas is similar to the color of the ocean. The ocean is similar to the sky. And the sky reminds us of the Kisra covered of the throne of Hashem. So when you're looking at the tchelas, you're supposed to be thinking about, you're supposed to be thinking upwards. So you're focusing to above. It's supposed to be focusing to the greatness of Hashem. But we actually want you looking down at the same time. We want you looking downwards so that you at the same time remember how you are created from dirt, you are lowly like dirt, and you will return to dirt. So the reason why the tzitzis are on our corners is so that we should actually be looking downwards. And at the same time that we remind ourselves through the tchelas of the throne of Hashem, of the greatness of Hashem, we're looking downwards to remind ourselves of our loneliness. That is why the tzitzis around the bottom corners of our garments. Now, says the Chassam Sefer. The way I understand the Chassam Sefer, he actually takes Korach's claim that we just read in Rashi, where Korach says to Moshe, the garment that's all tchelis, why should it need a string of tchelis? The whole garment is tchelis. So typically, when we read Rashi, we understand Rashi to be saying, and therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, what you're saying doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense. And therefore nothing that you say makes sense. The Chassam Sefer doesn't seem to be stopping at, doesn't seem to learn Rashi like this. He actually seems to learn Rashi that he's bothered by the fact that Korach makes this claim. Right? Doesn't make sense. But he asks Moshe Rabbeinu, what's the halacha? Moshe Rabbeinu says, chayev. It's chayev. And he says, doesn't make sense. Alright, but Moshe Rabbeinu still said it's chayev. I mean, he didn't refute Moshe. He may have argued with it on him. He may be saying that maybe lied rationale, it doesn't make sense, but Moshe Rabbeinu still said, it's chayev. You have to have the tzitzis. And like I said, I think there's a lot of arguments back you can make to Korach about his claim. So really, according to Chassam Sefer, what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to say was like, what Korach was trying to say about the tzitzis was like this. He really, it was like a rhetorical statement. When he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, why can't your garment of tchelas, it should be, is it chayev or is it exempt? From, you know, the garment of all tchelas. Does it need tzitzis with a tchelas string? Moshe Rabbeinu says, yeah. So Korach says, well, why? What do you mean? If I've got the whole garment up above of tchelas, why do I need a tchelas below? So Elamai, one minute, Elamai says Korach, it must be, I mean, Korach's not even arguing on the actual halacha. He's trying to lead into his point. He's trying to ask Chassam Sefer's question, why is it sits us up here? but he's asking it with tchelis. And he's saying, if the tchelis is up here on your shirt, then you got it made. What do you need it on the bottom for? You know why you need it on the bottom? Because you always need to be looking downwards. A person has to always remember to be humble. So guess what, Moshe? If you're supposed to be humble, then how could you be king? How could you be king? You can't be humble and be a king. Those two things don't go together. Okay? So you know what? You know who should be king? Me. I should be king. Chamsetna says, the Karaf is trying to say, I should be king. You're too humble to be the king. And he brought that out through the Shtickle Torah, through this Dvar Torah that he was trying to say to Moshe Rabbeinu, that you see that the whole point of Tchelis, the whole point of Tzitzis on the bottom of your garments is to be humble, if that's what it's all about. So again, it could be that his main point for Moshe Rabbeinu was actually to show what he was saying isn't true, but at the same time he's trying to allude to another idea, or maybe that's primarily what he was trying to bring out. But he's also trying to bring out over here that the tchelis, you're telling me that tchelis can't be up here, because you always have to be able to look down and be humble. Well, if you're saying that we always have to look down and be humble, right, then hello, you can't be king then, because you're too humble to be king. You can't be humble and be a king at the same time. So I should be king. That was what Karach was trying
he
to bring out.
Too humble, though, what do you think?
He was trying, no, wait a minute. We'll see, I'm bringing out an interesting Rambam about this. But basically he's trying to say to Moshe Rabbeinu, you are too humble. You are too humble. If we see from Tzitzis that there's a certain idea that even when a person thinks high, that they have to actually be realizing their humility, then and that's what you're telling me the halacha is about, right? That's what you're telling me. You're telling me you have to always have tchelis. You always have to have tzitzis. You always have to have the tchelis on the bottom. Why? Because you have to have humility. No? So then how can you be king? Once we're talking about humility, how could you be king? You're the prophet. I should say better. If you're supposed to be humble, right? So that makes sense for being a prophet, for you being the prophet to the people. But it doesn't make sense for you being the king to the people. So the Chacham Sefer then says, we showed that all kings weren't prophets and all prophets weren't kings. So what makes Moshe Rabbeinu different? Why was Moshe Taka both? So his answer is that why was Moshe Rabbeinu different? Because Moshe was really humble. I'm not sure what that means. I'm not really sure what that means. I mean, if the king has to show himself above everyone, then what is being more humble going to help you? But let me continue. Let me just finish off what Chassam Sefer says. Chassam Sefer says, and this is what Chazal meant when they said, Pnei Moshe kepnei Chama. The face of Moshe was like the face of the sun. Trying to talk about Moshe's level of prophecy, you know, the shine of prophecy on him was like the sun, while on Yeshua was like the moon. Now, but the Chassam Sefer says, the analogy to the sun is very specific. And that is because we know the world was created with darkness. Then Hashem created the sun. So the sun lights up the darkness. So we really have to see the sun as, so to speak, serving the dark. Because the world was created dark. It's like the world is essentially dark. You have a sun that now lights up the world. Now, the sun has a lot of control over the world. And the Pasuk says, "V'lim shalayim v'alayim," to rule over the day and night. But although the sun is a ruler, the sun doesn't just like sit there and everybody comes to it. It goes around, it's the one that goes around the world. It's the one that basically gives light to the world. It goes around giving light to the world. The world doesn't come to it to get light. It goes around giving light. It's actually an example of something that's a ruler and a servant at the same time. It rules over the world because of the fact that the world needs the light. But it also acts in a way of serving others, because it goes around and gives the light.
Doesn't agree with astronomy, but...
Okay, you're right, I'm sorry about that. You're right, but that's how it appears.
Yeah, that's how it appears. Right.
It appears as if it's moving around and serving everyone. Right. That's how we perceive it, right? We don't perceive it just like sitting there and somehow or another we all go to it,
right?
Right? Even though you're right, in actuality, right, everything is going around the sun.
Right.
Good point. All right, so now he doesn't work so well, but that's what he says. But again, the way we perceive it is that although the sun, again, is in control of a lot of things, right, But it goes around giving the light to everyone. That was Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the son. He was the ruler, but he was also the humble one that could be humble and actually be a servant to the people at the same time that he was above everyone else. And therefore, says the Chassam Sefer, that is why Moshe Rabbeinu, when he said to Korach that Hashem has made parameters, he's made boundaries in the world, and that the same way you cannot change day to night, you cannot take away the Kuna Gadayla from Aaron. And Korach and the Chassam Sefer asks, why do they use the analogy of day and night for the boundary that can't be changed? The answer is because day and night is this idea. The idea of the sun being the ruler, that at the same time being the ruler is humble, okay? That's the same way that exists in the world and it can't be changed, okay? The same thing, the fact that I am the king, I am the leader. Although I have the humility, you also can't change that. So that the Chassam Sefer is saying there's a couple of things going on here. Korach clearly is talking about, you know, clearly saying to everyone, about everyone, why to Moshe Rabbeinu, you were the king, why did you give Kuna Gedolah to Aaron? And it seems that Korach's claim is about the Kuna Gedolah, if not for himself, for everyone. But at the same time it seems, or at least or the way the Chassam Sefer is learning, that if not the other way, or at least simultaneously, you have Korach actually trying to say to Moshe Rabbeinu, you can't be king. Rashi says, again, the way Rashi brings down is, you took yourself to be the king, and you gave it to your, but you shouldn't give it to your brother, the Kuna Gedolah. Which sounds like Korach rather said, hey, Moshe, you can be king. But Chassam Sefer is saying there was another argument going on. And the other argument that was going on was the fact that Korach was also saying to Moshe, you can't be king. You want to be Kohen Gadol? Maybe I can be Kohen Gadol. You can't be king. Then I should be king. Either I'm Kohen Gadol or I'm king. But the whole Chassam Sefer is just very interesting. The way he's first of all this whole concept about a king can't be a navi can't be a king, and how Korach is how he weaves this into the whole episode here of Korach. Now, but as I mentioned before, the Chassam Sefer says the Moshe Rabbeinu was able to be both because he was really humble. What does that mean? How do we understand that? I have a hard time understanding it as, well, because Moshe Rabbeinu was so super humble, he can do both. I mean, which one is it? I'll offer the following explanation, possible explanation. If I'm correct what I said before, that the reason the king has to lift himself above everyone is because he's the example on earth of Hashem the king, not that we say he's Hashem, but he's supposed to be the example for the Jewish people to take from how to relate to Hashem as king. So then Moshe Rabbeinu was able actually through his humility to do that. Meaning, the king has to be the representative of Hashem in the world to the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to, in order for the Jewish people to recognize Hashem as king, they need a human king as an example. And if the king would not have this trait of being above everyone, he'd actually be very humble to everyone, as Shmuel HaNavi was, as Elisha HaNavi was, going to the people to take care of them. So then the Jewish people just don't have that example of the ultimate king above everyone. Even though we know that Hashem supplies us with everything too. But it's going to be very difficult for the Jewish people to be able to have that example of a king that could represent that could be a symbol to them of Hashem being king. But for Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the most humble of all people, Moshe Rabbeinu is the most humble of all people because Moshe Rabbeinu has the greatest perception of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Moshe Rabbeinu realizes that he has no existence on his own. We all have to strive to realize that there is no power in the world other than the Ribbono Shel Olam. Nothing has power other than him. And really on the highest level, without getting too complicated, the Nefesh HaChaim teaches us that really everything is Ribbono Shel Olam. the oneness of Hashem that we talk about, the absolute oneness of Hashem, is really that everything is Ribbono Shel Olam. Somehow or another, we have a perception of our own existence that we have to live by, but in essence, everything is Ribbono Shel Olam. There is no other existence other than Ribbono Shel Olam. If you can't get there, you have to at least be at a point that nothing has its own power, nothing really stands on its own. Moshe Rabbeinu, as the humblest of all people, negates his own existence completely. Moshe Rabbeinu, you look at Moshe Rabbeinu, the way he acts, the way he carries himself, what do you see in Moshe Rabbeinu? You see the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because he has no existence on his own. He doesn't perceive himself on his own. His whole perception of himself is one with the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's his humility. If so, Moshe Rabbeinu fulfills that example of the Jewish people of being able to actually have a representation of the Ribbono Shel Olam in this world. For them to be able to relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam, they can relate to the Ribbono Shel Olam through Moshe Rabbeinu, through his humility. Because Moshe Rabbeinu totally negates himself. David HaMelech is a very humble person also. David HaMelech says, as the Chassam Sefer brings out, David HaMelech says, "Anechi teilas lo yish, I'm a worm." But you're a worm. You're not nothing. You're a worm. What does Moshe Rabbeinu say? "V'nachnu mo, we're nothing. What are we?" Moshe Rabbeinu totally negates himself. Moshe Rabbeinu sees no existence of his own. Sees no power, no nothing on his own. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is able to be that representative of the Ribbono Shel Olam to the Jewish people in this world. They don't need the big, they don't need this awesome figure to give them that awesome, to use him as, so to speak, the springboard to feel fear and awe to Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu does that. Because Moshe Rabbeinu says, represents to everyone, there's nothing else besides the Ribbono Shel Olam. So he could do both. Was that a contradiction to him? But for other people who can't be able to handle both, it is a contradiction. Now, it's just, I want to conclude with something very important that people should bear in mind. And that is that we know that the king has to be humble also. The king of the Jewish people has to have humility. And the Rambam in Perek Beis, of the laws of kings, Hilchos Melachim, Halacha, Perek Beis, chapter 2, Halacha Vav. The same way the Torah gives the king tremendous honor. There's examples before that. The Rambam cites many examples of that. And everyone is obligated to honor him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded the king that in his heart he has to be lowly. Don't overdo it. Don't be that haughty and arrogant over the Jewish people. So that his heart does not rise above his brethren. The king has a hard job. He's got to hold himself higher than everyone. But again, not be too arrogant over everyone. Not be arrogant. He should be merciful and kind to small and to big. And he should be always involved in their needs and in their benefit. And be careful with the honor of the smallest of the small. When he speaks to the assembly, to the people, he should speak softly, etc. And he should tolerate their troubles and their burdens and their complaints, kasha yisa ha'emenes ha'yonik, as Moshe Rabbeinu said, as the nurse carries the little child. Raya kara ha'kasev, the Torah calls him a shepherd. So the king is clearly described as someone that, yes, he serves the people, he honors the people, he takes care of everyone. Any person can come before the king. No one can be held back from the king. At the same time, there's a certain honor that we're obligated to give him, the sort of honor that he has to uphold, and he can't let it go, because he's the king. But not that the king now becomes this absolute power and is way above everyone. On the contrary, in his heart he has to be humble, and he has to be ready to take care of all the needs of the Jewish people. The Rambam does not bring this down, But there is also a chazal where David HaMelech said that although he was king, he still was always ready to dirty his hands in the blood of women. Meaning, when a woman's blood had to be checked, does this blood make her a nida or not? Right? David HaMelech didn't say, this is not for the king. He did it. He took care of it. As the Rambam says, the yachas ha-kavakash v'ktanim, the chaychainin, the barach, m'ktanim, the gudelin, the yates, the yad, the chavtseva, the tevatam. He's merciful to big, to important people, to low, to unimportant people, and he's always involved in their benefit. That's the king. He's a servant of the people. But he still has to hold himself above. He still has to act he still has to hold himself above the people. Not in his heart, not in his actions in an arrogant way, but he still has to hold himself above the people. At the same time, humble in his heart, ready to help every single person. And just to add, I had a Rebbe in Philadelphia, Yeshiva Mendel Kaplan of Zatzal, and he used this rabbin to describe one of the great Talmid HaChachanim of the Lithuanian Jew before World War II, Reb Chaim Isaac Grudzinski. Reb Chaim Isaac Grudzinski was in Vilna, and again he was the head of, he was basically the leader of Lithuanian Jewry. Every issue of the Klal went through him. And you can read, and it's been recorded, his house was on wheels. Place was on wheels. People constantly coming, going, asking questions, people asking advice. He was the address for all questions and needs. I read a story that one time a young girl approached him for something. She mentioned to him that she was a Kala. So he asked her, did you learn the laws of Taharas Mishpach, family purity? She said, no. He got up from his chair. He was always surrounded by people. He took the girl to the side. He stared straight out the window the whole time as she stood next to him, and he taught her the halacha she needed. The busiest man, he stopped to take care of this one girl, to teach her what she needed to do. And I remember Kaplan's example was that when his wife was a young girl, she had to one time go to Vilna for a doctor. So she stopped in Rabbi Chaim Isaac Grudzinski to get the doctor. A couple of years later, I don't know how many years later, she came back to Reb Chaim Isaac, and he recognized her, and he asked her how she was, remembering what it was before. And the man was known to be a super genius. But I think what Mendel's point was that a man who was so busy with so many, 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 many things, as though you were being a genius, that you'll still remember this girl, this little girl 5 years later, and her problem that she had 5 years ago, and ask her about it. That comes from caring. That was the example of a king. The example of a king is, no matter how great a leader he is, but he's ready and he's always ready to take care of the needs and the benefit of all people, great and small.